The North London Derby is always a massive game, soaked in history and decades of local enmity. But this Sunday, it's even bigger than usual. Arsenal are chasing the title, while Spurs are pushing for a Champions League spot, even if Ange Postecoglou will insist that it won't make or break their season. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. One of the biggest games of the season so far. We've got a top team to preview it, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, Arsenal flexed their muscles in midweek by smashing a pretty feeble Chelsea side, but this, in theory, should be a much, much tougher test.
Yeah, big week for Arsenal. This week looked like the week that could prove pretty decisive to them and their title prospects, having to host Chelsea and then travel to Spurs, two of their main rivals, really. But they passed the first test with flying colours. Couldn't have made a better start, really, with the early goal. You could see they were highly motivated, played with real intent from the off. Obviously aided in the second half by Chelsea downing tools a little bit, but full credit to Arsenal for putting their foot down, racking up an even better goal difference in the process too, because it is those kind of fine margins that really could decide this title race. And if it does, it's advantage Arsenal right now in that respect. They've also got the points on the board too, which is the position you probably want to be in. Now, there isn't a huge amount I can say negatively about Arsenal really coming into this game, and I think we've quite rightfully sort of eulogised about them many times this season and over the last two campaigns, really. The defensive process has been exceptional, in particular. Perhaps they could be a little bit more clinical at times, but we're probably nitpicking a little bit. They're further down the track in terms of progress than I ever expected, kind of going back 18 months, really. So full credit to Arteta and his troops. However, I'm going to oppose them on Sunday, purely down to price, really, because I'll get to Spurs shortly, but for Arsenal, going away to Spurs, as you said, one of their most difficult tasks of the season, they're going there on Sunday as odds on favourites, which for me feels a touch too short, actually. City haven't yet been to Postecoglou in the Tottenham under Postecoglou in the Premier League. They obviously won here in the FA Cup on that Friday night when Spurs just didn't seem to show. But Liverpool were here back in September, albeit, you know, quite a long time ago, but they were 2.3 that day. So Arsenal is odds on favourites away at Spurs. Doesn't happen often. You have to go back to November 2004, 20 years ago, for the last time Arsenal were odds on favourites. Now, this probably is one of the better Arsenal sides since that game 20 years ago. But I wouldn't say Spurs are anywhere near the lowest ebb they've been during that sequence either. So, now Arsenal won that game 20 years ago, 5-4. Tottenham finished ninth. Arsenal finished runner-up that season. So, you know, there's a decent difference between the two teams in terms of where they were that day. And I looked at the team sheets that day. Spurs had a side containing Noe Paramo, Nuruddin Nemet, Eric Edmond, Michael Brown. Arsenal's 11 that day: Lehmann, Lauren, Toure, Sigan, Cole, Ljungberg, Vieira, Fabregas, Reyes, Bergkamp, Henri, with Van Persie and Pires coming off the bench. So that's a serious disparity between the two sides on the day, which I don't think is going to be massively reflected in the same this weekend. Spurs possibly without both full-back options, which is a big blow, but they will be close to full strength everywhere else. We know Spurs' own performance levels have dipped quite significantly since the winter, but it's difficult not to overstate the motivational factor here, being at home with an opportunity to disrupt your biggest rivals and their title challenge. And I think Spurs have been largely decent when facing elite opponents under Postecoglou. 4 wins, 3 draws, 2 defeats against the top seven this season. They held Arsenal at the Emirates. They held City at the Etihad. They smashed up Villa at Villa Park, beat Liverpool home at home, albeit controversially. But yeah, perhaps there's something in this too. Stylistically, Spurs can be at their best when they're given the freedom to play rather than attempting to break down a low block. And there has been that sort of accusation that teams have worked Postecoglou's team out a little bit. But I think that can be more applicable to bottom half teams in terms of sitting in that low block and frustrating Tottenham. So I think Arsenal, well, they have to come out and play, really, don't they? Because they have to try and win every game to try and win this title. So I think that will suit Spurs to some extent. And yeah, I'm going to back them with a half goal start here at 1.8. So I feel more comfortable being pro Tottenham here at those prices on that line than backing Arsenal at odds on.
Odds compiler and tipster Mark Stinchcombe in the starting side again. Stinch, we know Tottenham can chase down Aston Villa, but as Mark's alluded to, they're going to have to find more consistency than they've shown in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned a few weeks because they've had 2 weeks off. So I imagine they might have been able to fix some issues. But I think more key in that is Arsenal played four times in that period since the international break. And this game is going to be Arsenal's ninth game in 29 days. So I definitely think that Arsenal are a bit short here at... They're 4-5 on the sports book. They were 8-13 at home in the reverse fixture. And okay, you can say that they've probably improved since the beginning of the season, but have they improved significantly enough once you remove the home advantage and then give that home advantage to Spurs? So I definitely think a pro Spurs angle is the way to go. Just really because of the maybe fixture congestion and the fact that we know that sort of Postecoglou's style is to be offensive. So I definitely think there's something pro Spurs we can do. Just quickly looking at the title odds, Arsenal are 2.76, Man City are 1.63. We're speaking before City's game against Brighton, so we're not sure how that has gone. But you know, clearly the market is saying that Arsenal have got a good chance of winning this league. And in order to do that, they need to, as you say, keep winning games. 1-12 of their last 14. And they've been ahead at halftime in 8 of their last 11. So I think quick starts has been real key to winning some of these games. So if they come out quickly here, and you imagine Spurs would as well, we could really have sort of an end-to-end match. I mean, 14 of Spurs' last 15 have gone over 2.5 goals. And we know in the reverse fixture, which is sort of the only game we've got to go off between Arteta and Postecoglou, you know, we know it was 2-2 and Spurs responded pretty quickly both time to Arsenal scoring. So I think it could be something similar here. So I think it should be really exciting. The angle I like the look of was Spurs to have over 12.5 shots here at 4-5. They average 17.5 at home. And in the away fixture to Arsenal, they had 13 in that one. So with home advantage, I would expect that number to potentially increase. And as we say, I do think this fixture congestion of Arsenal's might mean that they can't maybe be relentless, and maybe at times we'll have to sort of camp in a little bit. And that would bring in the likes of Son and Kulusevski shooting from range as well, perhaps. So, yeah, that was the angle I like the look of.
And the winner of the Most Suave and Sophisticated Trader Award couldn't be here today, so we booked Emmett O'Keefe instead. Emmett, Arsenal were timid and ineffective against Bayern in the Champions League. They've been a totally different animal in the Premier League, and that's what I guess made some of their knockout performances in Europe all the more jarring, because there was that disparity in approach.
Yes, and I think also... I think a flat track bully is harsh, but I think like there is a thing with Arsenal that if you can work out and you're brave enough to play through their press like Aston Villa did and like Bayern Munich would, you can kind of neutralize them. I think that it's, and I think we have a team in Tottenham, the way Postecoglou approaches matches and the kind of unpredictability in terms of the movement of his team positioning with the fullbacks pushed up. I think they can hurt Arsenal in possession in a way a lot of teams can't. The likes of Wolves, Chelsea, like with De Sassi and Balotelli and Petrovic kind of not being comfortable on the ball. I don't think that's the case with Tottenham. I think with Romero and Van de Ven, Udogi, they have defenders who are comfortable on the ball under pressure. I think with likes and with James Maddison as well, like they've and Kulusevski, like they have again forwards who are comfortable taking the ball under pressure and getting Tottenham up the pitch. So I think Tottenham are potentially kind of a bad matchup for Arsenal, which we saw earlier in the season at the Emirates, where we Tottenham getting a point where Arsenal were in kind of really hot form coming into the game. And so I agree with the lads. I think Spurs look too big here to me, given the kind of rest advantage. I was looking at our kind of sports book odds changes after the Chelsea game. Like Spurs were 5-2. To win this match before Arsenal played Chelsea, and are now out to kind of 3-1 after Arsenal's demolition of Chelsea. And I don't feel any differently about Arsenal after that game. I think that just said more about how inept Chelsea are. I think it is no impact on my feeling on Arsenal's chance in this game. And just in terms of Arsenal as well, I think more than other teams, I think one of Mikel Arteta's only weaknesses as a manager is I think he's reluctant to rotate his top players and kind of take them off quickly. I think we saw like Martin Odegaard, like why is he playing 90 minutes? Like when they're 5-0 up against Chelsea, yeah. Like he's there, like when he's playing like a god and he's playing, and I think he's clearly one of their most important players. So I think we saw in the Aston Villa game, like what Stinch is saying, in the first half, Arsenal could play with great intensity and they could have dominated Villa and could easily have been ahead at half time. But after half time, that intensity really dropped. So it wouldn't shock me if Spurs can get to half time, even one goal down, or ideally level. I think the likelihood is we'll see a worse Arsenal, and Spurs can kind of exploit that. So yeah, I like Tottenham double chance here. The other, if you're looking at a prop market, an old reliable here, the kind of Christian Romero being a lunatic kind of special
trademark
here.
Yeah.
Trademark here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's committed 4 fouls and been carded in his last 2 North London derbies. He's been carded and committed 3 fouls in 2 of his last 3 Premier League matches. So that's, I think, like he's quite short for he's quite short to be carded. I cut 2.4, but adding him to commit 2 fouls and be carded, or 3 fouls and be carded, gives it a nice boost. That's the way I'd look at it as well. We don't offer the price, but we can maybe look to offer it as an odds on that. But if you've access to it, I think Romero to be sent off at 20-1 or bigger as well is definitely worth a look. I think he's maybe early in the season he showed sign of a leopard changing his spots, but I don't think so. I think in what could be a very, very hot tempered game with himself and Kai Havertz going at it, I think Romero to be sent off worth a look as well.
Is there an angle there with doubling it up with Havertz to get involved in a bit of nonsense?
Yeah, I would just worry, wait for team news there. But I would presume Havertz will play up top. But if he does, yeah, I think I wouldn't put anyone off the Havertz Romero card double for sure.
Will the little voices in Christian Romero's head prove too loud for him to ignore? We will see. If you want to be notified every time a new episode of Football Only Better goes live, and why wouldn't you want that? Make sure you follow wherever you get your podcasts. And for the YouTube version, make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. Now, at time of recording, we don't know what happened with Manchester City's game at Brighton, but we do know that they'll visit Nottingham Forest on Sunday. Stinch, who knows what conspiracy theories Forrest will concoct after this one? Maybe Howard Webb, some kind of alien agitator, Anthony Taylor's an android. Who knows? Either way, this is a very tough game for Forrest that comes at pretty bad time, really.
Yeah, I think as a Liverpool fan, I think I'm happy to label the Premier League season as maybe an asterisk next to it, because even after the season finishes, I still think points deductions are gonna be reviewed, right? So it's not even as if after 38 games, teams will actually know where they stand. And I think that's what makes trying to decipher Forest games and the motivation and what they actually need and want quite difficult to unpack.
I mean, they've got to just keep trying to rack up as many points as they possibly can, haven't they? Because they've just got to assume. I mean, Everton, to be fair, for all the stick Everton gets sometimes, to be fair, they have at least kind of just got on with it. Their fans haven't, but at least they have.
Yeah, and it feels like Forest maybe, like, they're not going for wins. It's almost as if, like, well, if we scrape a point, that might be enough. And what I'm kind of referring to.
Well,
what I'm kind of referring to, if they take the lead in this game, for example, like how do you decide like how they play out the rest of the game? And then if Man City equalise, do Forest then try and get another one, or do they say that they're happy with a point? I think it's really really difficult, and basically as a result of that, I wouldn't want to back them. I wouldn't want to be proactive with Forest at all. They, as you say, it seems as though they're very reactive to basically what's happening, rather than actually we'll just make sure that this is decided in our own hands. We'll go out and try and win football matches, and if we say that we are better, I mean, they're up against kind of Luton, aren't they, right, for the last relegation place? And Emmett already mentioned about the difference in budget. You know, could Luton go out and spend 30 million plus on Morgan Gibbs-White? I don't think they can, for example. So Forest really should be proactive, but they're seemingly not. Obviously, as you say, we don't know how Man City have got on, but you would imagine that regardless, they'll be going for the victory here to ensure that they stay top of the league. I mean, we've as a Liverpool fan, you know exactly how City are second half of the season, they are just relentless. They've won 12 of their last 15 matches in the league, and I would expect their win percentage to continue to increase. I think the only thing negative really for City is they'll have obviously played Thursday night, and Forest will have had a week off, similar to the Spurs-Arsenal game. And this will be their ninth game in 29 days, City. So you wonder if maybe there will be opportunities for Forest to perhaps maybe take advantage. And look, after that Everton victory against Liverpool, it's sort of, you know, Forest versus Luton for that last spot, 3 points deduction. So they can't rely on other teams to keep dropping points. At some point, they're going to have to do something, I would think. But as you say, it's
Burnley are on the move as well. I know we've talked about Luton, but I mean, it's unlikely. But if Burnley somehow strung 2-3 wins together, who knows?
Yeah, and Forest play Burnley, I think, in the remaining fixtures as well. So they wouldn't want to have it be left all to that game, where they still need to collect something. So yeah, they really need to get going. So yeah, but rather than try and back Forest to score or anything like that, I actually like the look of Callum Hudson-Odoi to do something, because he seems to be a bit reinvigorated of late. This is a guy, if you remember, a few years ago, Bayern Munich wanted to take him on loan for the rest of the season with the option to buy him for 70 million.
Hasan Salihamidžić was obsessed with him at one stage when he was a sporting director.
So I'm not going to say he's maybe a 70 million pound player, but I think he's shown that he's better than perhaps, playing for a relegation Premier League side, essentially. He's got 5 goals this season. But for me, rather than, again, trying to take him to score, I like the look of him to have a shot on target here at 13-8. He's registered 14 shots on target in his last 12 starts. And again, I think the beauty here is it doesn't have to be a fantastic shot. Just has to make sure that it obviously goes in between the posts and doesn't get blocked by a defender. And I think Forrest, the way they play with both him and Gibbs White, they should have opportunities on the counter-attack against what could be a little bit of a tired Man City team after all these games.
Emmett, how do you see this one going? Because Forrest are a curious team, because they've got some really good individuals in that side, but you just don't necessarily trust Nuno to take the handbrake off enough.
100%. Yeah, I think one thing that's interesting about Forest is their underlying numbers since Nuno joined the club are excellent. Like, they're like expected points, like they're up towards top six basically since Nuno joined, which I was kind of surprised to see. But one thing is, I think, incredible about Nottingham Forest is their ineptitude in the goalkeeping position. Like, some of these numbers are incredible. Like just to give listeners a kind of a try to brief explainer what this statistic is, this post shot expected goals. So roughly it's kind of saying based on a team shot, what was the chance of it going in, and kind of over the season giving a keeper a kind of a plus or minus rating based on how many goals they've kind of saved or not saved based on what they were expected to. So like on the higher end of this metric, you'd have Emi Martinez, as you'd expect, who basically has saved a total of, over the season, 7 goals, more than he should have, kind of based on the shots. But Forrest, incredibly, they have 3 goalkeepers in the top in the bottom 8 in the Premier League. That's a 3. Like, that is in, like, so they've, over the season, Forest goalkeepers have conceded 17 goals, more than they should have, based on the shots they faced, which is, like, needless to say, leagues more than kind of any other team in the Premier League. And I do think they're, as kind of Stinch alluded to, they're like, likes of Gibbs White, Hudson-Odoi, and if they could ever get a one E fit and kind of be able to rotate him and Chris Wood, like, they are a kind of a potent attack, and against a slightly fatigued City, I definitely see this game being competitive. But the angle I liked here, again, it's an old one, but we'll stick with it, is just the Forest ineptitude at set pieces. They've conceded, again, by far the most goals of any Premier League team from set plays. I would just play Ruben Dias basically to have a shot and have a shot on target. He's just over evens to have a shot, and he's 7-2 to have a shot on target. He's averaging around 0.3 shots on target per game and 0.7 shots per game. I think with Forest's ineptitude at set pieces and the likelihood of Sihy racking up 7, 8, 9 corners in this game, I think he maybe should be slightly shorter in those markets. That's the way I'd look.
Yeah, Matt Sells did let in a couple of goals from miles out against Everton last weekend. That goalkeeping issue has been a big one. Matt Turner has not been remotely up to snuff as a first-choice Premier League goalkeeper. Mark, how do you see this one going? Because it is that curiosity, isn't it? You know Forrest are talented, just can't quite put it all together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to labour the point on fatigue or the heavy schedule. Stinch has done that already with Man City. So I do expect them to drop points at some point between now and the end of the season. Obviously, we're talking before that trip to Brighton. I'd include that in that sample too. But it's probably not going to be this weekend at the City Ground, although they did fail to win at Forest last season. A match City dominated but weren't able to pick up the points. But yeah, if you look at their record before the Brighton trip, City have won 21 of 25 Premier League games against teams in sixth and below this season. That includes 10 wins from 12 on their travels, which is immense consistency. They've actually scored at least 3 goals in 8 of those 12 away games as well. So keeping them at bay is going to be very difficult for Forest if you've got goalkeepers of that sort of standard between the sticks, as Emmett's pointed out. But, you know, I think all round they're culpable, really. A lack of concentration and cohesion at times, their set-piece issues, it all kind of comes together, really. And they've managed just 1 clean sheet since Bonfire Night and 2 clean sheets at the City Ground all season, which is clearly where their issues are at. But, yeah, I think the best way for me to play this...
I haven't heard you use Bonfire Night as a marker in the season before. I quite like that.
Yeah,
I would like more of that, more obscure holidays to be thrown in.
We had Halloween, didn't we?
We did have Halloween, yes.
I'm sure we've done Valentine's Day at some point
as
well.
Yes, we have. So that's the first time I think we've had a mention of Bonfire Night. Carry on. That just tickled me, that did.
So, I think the way to play this is to back City to win, but include both sides scoring, because it's 2.4 on the sportsbook. You'll get bigger on the exchange closer to kickoff. And for a couple of reasons, really, but A, I don't have faith in City keeping clean sheets against anyone, and B, Forest do have the attacking pedigree to create opportunities, especially at the City Ground. I know Chris Wood has been a little bit profligate in recent weeks, but look at the ability elsewhere. You know, Gio Reyna's starting to have a bit of an impact, Hudson-Odoi, Gibbs-White, Elanga, Awoniyi is due back in the group this week as well. They're absolutely stacked in forward areas, and they definitely have the best attacking pedigree of all the sides down there in the bottom half. So they've also got a knack of getting a goal at home. They've scored in 14 of 17 this season. Since promotion to the Premier League, they've scored in all bar 5 of 36 Premier League games at home as well in Premier League football. And these statistics around Man City are quite shocking, actually, considering their pedigree. But they've managed only 3 clean sheets on the road in the Premier League this season. But across all comps, 4 clean sheets in 23 away days this season. So that's remarkably poor for a team who we perceive as being the best team on the planet, really. So 12 of their 16 away wins this season have come alongside both teams to score. And I think that just kind of further strengthens the case here for a 2.4 shot. They're trading around 136. BTTS is around 1.8. So again, the market is telling us that they expect City to win comfortably. But, you know, it's still odds on for Forrester to contribute here too. So quite happy to have the 2.4 on side.
Now, whether it's a game before Whitson or after it, we know that injury time goals could be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bets. And now you've got 90-minute payouts to rescue you. If the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands, your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18+, begambleaware.org. Bologna on the cusp of Champions League qualification, got a brilliant win at their closest challengers, Roma, last time out. Thought they were excellent in that game. Mark, I mean, Thiago Motta's side, they play Udinese next, firm favourites to win that game. For anybody who doesn't know, Bologna have genuinely been one of the best teams in Italy. There's no fluke here.
Yeah, they've been absolutely superb. Just a great team to watch and enjoy, especially. This is, if you know, Bologna do reach the Champions League. It's one of the greatest achievements in European football this season. There's been a few, obviously, with Leverkusen and Stuttgart going brilliantly in Germany, Brest going so well in Ligue 1. But nobody expected Bologna to be anywhere close to the top four or five. And they were absolutely sensational away at that game in Roma on Monday. You know, a high pressurised match that mattered a huge amount for both sides and their prospects for a top five finish. And Bologna were brilliant. And they've done it all without Lewis Ferguson as well, who's been absolutely superb, and he's out now long term. Thiago Motta has been, you know, talked about for bigger and better jobs elsewhere, but you know, he's a coach who kind of came out after that Roma game and said he's very pleased with his players, he's pleased with where he's at right now, and wants to take this club forward. And by the sounds of it, other clubs are kind of looking elsewhere, so he may well be taking Bologna into the Champions League next season, which would be great to see, especially when you consider his managerial career at the very beginning. He made a few flippant comments about tactics and formations, and a lot of people sneered at him and his ideas and his ideals.
I think he was misunderstood, wasn't he? He said that he came up with this 2-7-2 idea and people read it the wrong way. What he meant was two on the flank, seven in the middle, two on the other flank. And they thought he was talking about having two defenders, two strikers and seven midfielders. No.
He was ridiculed for that.
Somewhere as well.
Yeah, he was ridiculed for that for quite some time, really, and sneered at, really. So it's great to see him doing well. But Bologna now do have a nice cushion over sixth. So the top five will get Champions League in Italy this season. But they're not completely secure yet. Atalanta are still coming along quite strong in sixth. So I think they're going to be highly motivated to try and complete the season as soon as they can. And at home, they've been superb. You know, exclude the top two, the two Milan clubs, 12 wins from 15 at home, conceding just 5 goals in those 15 games, 11 clean sheets in their own backyard. So going back to the old classic of backing Bologna to win and under 4.5 goals, only one of their games this season has featured 5 goals or more. Just gets you a bit more on side when backing the win to nil. You know, you've got the 2-1 or 3-1 on your side as well. And the price is nice. It's 1.91. So Udinese are only outside the drop zone on goal difference. They've lost 3 of the last 4, including a crucial 6-pointer at home to Verona last weekend. They've only scored 12 goals away from home all season. I think they'll be given the squeeze by Bologna here. So happy to be with the hosts.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Bologna this season, do treat yourself. They are a great team to watch. That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, we've got a show looking ahead to the Champions League semi-finals coming up, so make sure you join us for that. All of our shows are on YouTube on Betfair's channel for non-racing content, so like and subscribe. From Stinch, from Mark, from Emmett, and from me, it's goodbye for now.